time president.
It won't be an hour. Right. I want us to continue, actually, thinking about Isaiah this morning. So we're going to be diving into Isaiah, although maybe a little bit before, perhaps Isaiah 59 rather than Isaiah 65. Because there was something that struck me, that it's also in Isaiah 65, the same little concept is there, where God is saying in verse 2, all day long I've held out my hands. That's where we're sort of springboarding this little idea, to see a God who is eager to reach people. And that's not surprising, that's not challenging. In fact, sometimes I'm told that I'm too challenging in my talks. I ask too many questions and don't give anywhere near enough answers. And maybe that's true, maybe that's also true of this morning, although nobody yet said that to me. And I think I do it deliberately, because I think it's incredibly easy for a human being to go from being a follower of the Lord Jesus to a Pharisee. It's almost natural that we start finding things having more meaning, that the way we do certain things or whatever. And so the reason I ask questions, because of course the Pharisees missed the whole point of the law, is to make sure that I, most of all, am always alert to that sort of natural tendency to start getting just into things that are really traditions without value, just like the Pharisees had done, where Jesus actually said to them, you know, you're brilliant at coming up with these great ways of something that you say has meaning but is so far from the law. Anyway, all of that's largely irrelevant, because this morning I don't want to ask any challenging questions. This morning you can just relax. This morning, for now, I want us to think about something so ridiculously simple, but that does come with a proviso that I'm not saying it's going to be simple for us to then apply it, to actually live it. You might say that's a harder challenge, I don't know, but you can tell me later. Here it is. This is what I want us to think about this morning, in order to encourage us, in order to build us up, to make us feel sort of stronger because of what the Lord Jesus has done and because of God being part of our lives, to feel more confident, more certain of a hope. It is simply that God has, is, and will deliver us. That's it. God, all day long, has held out his hands to this obstinate people. There's a picture of also, if you think of the Lord Jesus, how many times can you think of the Lord Jesus reaching out his hands? I wonder how many of you would fairly quickly think of something like Matthew 14 with Peter walking on water and Jesus reaching out to get to him. And it's not a picture, is it, where the Lord Jesus represents entirely that nature of God, if you like, showing us the character of God through what the Lord Jesus did. And it wasn't Peter, I'm here, you've just got to go that small bit, if you can just reach me, come on. It's not that at all, is it, with the Lord Jesus? With Jesus, it was instant. He was there, reaching him as soon as he started, immediately, and he reaches him and pulls him back up out of the water. And what I'm saying is that's a consistent message throughout all time. And so our goal, telling you literally the end of the exhortation and then you can switch off if you want to, is that we must trust and rely on God. That's what Isaiah says directly in one of the chapters we're going to come to in a minute. Trust and rely on God. That's our challenge. I'm not going to challenge you in what you think, what you feel, but I'm going to maybe challenge us to really do that. It's like Proverbs says, trust in the Lord and lean not on your own understanding. It's pretty hard, isn't it? Things that make so much sense, things that are logical. It's easy for us to lean on that. But what the message we're being told here is, trust, number one, rely, number two. Literally, lean on God. So, come with me to Isaiah 59. And it's this little phrase that comes up, and I think it appears just three times in the Bible, and I want us to look at just briefly at all three this morning. It's Isaiah 59, verse 1. Surely the arm of the Lord is not too short to save, nor his ear too dull to hear. So it's this picture of God's arm. Surely the arm of the Lord is not too short. He can reach, like Jesus did with Peter, pulling him out of the water. The arm of the Lord. Do we sometimes feel it is too short? Too short for us, for that situation, for whatever it is. Let's just think about this. And he continues with a description of what life is like when we're not trusting and relying on God. Come down to verse 10. Like the blind, we grope along the wall, feeling our way like men without eyes. At midday, we stumble as if it were twilight. Among the strong, we are like the dead. That's the picture of a life without God. A life that is not trusting and relying on God. A life that thinks we can do it on our own. We then are like somebody walking along in the dark, even though it's daylight. I mean, it would be like navigating this room, covering our eyes and trying to do it from what we've seen before or what we remember. And you know you'd soon trip over a chair, or you'd walk into a table, you'd hit the door, you'd miss the door and end up in the notice board. It would be crazy. It wouldn't make any sense. It's illogical for us to take that approach. And yet sometimes, do we? Do we rely on ourselves? Or do we trust in God? In verse 16, God says, he saw that there was no one. He was appalled that there was no one to intervene. So his own arm worked salvation for him, and his own righteousness sustained him. Perhaps there's a picture there, too, of the Lord Jesus. He's his own arm who worked salvation. The Lord Jesus, who was prepared that his arms would be stretched out, as it were, so that we can be saved. He saw that there was no one. So what should God have done? What could God have done? If he saw that everybody was far from him, if he saw that nobody was really trusting and relying on him, but all just stumbling along in the dark, even though it's daylight, what could he have done? Destroy us? Destroy the world? Could he have had that conversation like he did with Moses up the mountain when they started building the ox, the golden calf or whatever? And he says to Moses, Moses, those stiff-necked people, I'm gonna destroy them. I'm going to make you a great leader. I'm going to give you someone better. And it's Moses who pleads for the people and says, don't do that, God. Then everyone will see that you failed, that you brought your people out of Egypt to die. He knew God would not do that. So he didn't do that. Maybe God could have come to the conclusion that giving us free choice, free will, if you want to call it that, was not such a good idea after all. You know, the whole model, the whole basis on which God has built this world and put Adam and Eve in that garden to choose to remain obedient, to choose to live a life of dependence on God rather than independence from God. That whole basis was flawed. There was no one. No one to intervene. What conclusion could he have come to? Start again on a different basis? Different model? The conclusion God came to was that his own arm would work salvation for him. Do you see this picture of a God who is desperate to reach, desperate to be seen, that his arm is long enough? God provided that salvation. Just go back a little bit further to Isaiah 50, where we see this phrase again. This time, verse 2. When I came, why was there no one? When I called, why was there no one to answer? Was my arm too short to ransom you? Do I lack the strength to rescue you? And then he goes on to say about all the things that he can do by a mere rebuke. I dry up the sea. I turn rivers into a desert. Their fish rot for lack of water and die of thirst. I clothe the sky with darkness and make sackcloth its covering. All the things God can do. But when he came, there was no one. No one looking for him. No one looking and acknowledging and looking for salvation, but perhaps just people relying on themselves. Bottom line, we know God can do anything. Everything. And here and now, as we rationalise this and talk about it here amongst ourselves, it's easy to say, of course we acknowledge God. Of course he is our deliverer. Of course his arms are not too short. He can do anything. Easy. Easy to say. But I wonder if sometimes we doubt. Sometimes we have problems that we think, I don't know, are too big to take to God. It sounds stupid, doesn't it? When we say it, when we vocalise that, it sounds crazy to think that something would be too big for God. But do we try and hide some things that we struggle with and not actually just take them to God? Maybe we think some things God is not interested in because that's not the God part of our lives. That's our work or our, well, I don't know, whatever you want to place over here that is some box you've created that's sort of your stuff. God isn't interested in that bit, so you wouldn't bother him with something that's stressing you there. Let's go back to Numbers. Numbers chapter 11. It's the one other place that this little phrase appears. Maybe it helps us. We're talking about Moses. And it's the time of the people getting a bit fed up with food, the manna, and they want meat. God had provided, there was no doubt. You know, every day there was the manna there. Every day they could go and get it. Every day they had food. It wasn't quite what they wanted. And what can that have to do with God's arm being too short? What can that have to do with us hiding problems from God or thinking that things are not something that God would want to help with? Whether there's a solution that's even possible. Would you pray for something if you were certain that the outcome was a no, that you shouldn't have that? But let's look at Numbers 11 and let's just read from verse 16. The Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take of the Spirit that is on you and put the Spirit on them. They will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. Tell the people, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat. The Lord heard when you wailed, if only we had meat to eat. We were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and you will eat it. You will not only eat it for just one day, or 2 days, or 5, or 10, or 20 days, but for a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you. And you have wailed before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? I mean, it's understandable, the process that's going on here. The people, you know, we're so quick to judge them and think, why are they whining? You know, they've been taken out of slavery. They've been given a degree of freedom. They're on their journey towards this land and they're being fed every day. And yet, they're unhappy. And Moses literally is struggling to cope with dealing with all their complaints, which is why, of course, God's great suggestion is, look, you need some structure, Moses. Get some structure. Put some people in place. And then those people can have sort of groups and teams of people and it will all filter through much more easy. Oh, but and by the way, about that specific thing with meat, yeah, I'm going to give them some meat. I'm going to give them so much meat that they're not going to want to eat meat anymore. What would your response be to that as the leader, as Moses? How would you respond to God? I mean, the people have come to you with a complaint. They want food. They want meat. They're moaning. You're a bit fed up with them because you've helped them get out of Egypt. You've taken them on an incredible journey. They've seen miraculous things. And they're still moaning. Would you say, excellent God, bring it on. I want to give them some meat until they understand how valuable that manna was. Actually, what Moses said is a little bit surprising, because he immediately goes on the practical side. Look at verse 21. Moses said, here am I among 600,000 men on foot, and you say, I will give them meat to eat for a whole month. Would they have enough if flocks and herds were slaughtered for them? Would they have enough if all the fish in the sea were caught for them? It's brilliant, isn't it? He goes to God and says, have you thought this through? Have you actually looked how many people are here and how many animals are going to be needed to achieve what you're talking about? He's effectively saying, God, this isn't possible. It's too big. This is a great idea. And I love what what your intention is, to show them how valuable that manna is and that you are God and that they should trust in you and that you can do anything. But the scale of this is just beyond anything that is practical or achievable. Verse 23. The Lord answered Moses, is the Lord's arm too short? You will now see whether what I say will come true for you. I don't want to read too much into this, but is this an element of what we perhaps deal with as well, of doubt? You know, that Jonathan Orthberg, and he wrote that wonderful book about how faith and doubt are two parts of the same thing, actually. They're two sides of the same coin. And sometimes we think all doubt is bad. We mustn't have doubt. But the reality is, if you have no doubt, you actually have no faith. Because faith is certain of what we do not see. Therefore, there's a relationship there. But some of these people, like Moses, we sort of put up on pedestals and think of as these incredible relationships with God. Moses is described as a friend of God. They spoke to each other face to face, and so we can see him right up here. But here he is, in reality, just like the feeding of the 5,000, when they say, where are we going to buy enough food? And Jesus says, I'll show you. How many basketfuls? How many loaves? You see what happens. You see, if we just trust and rely on God instead of our own understanding, instead of our own logical ways, then God works through our lives to do things that we surely never expected. Because there are several stories going on here. We've got the people moaning. We've got God's anger. He's unhappy. And we've got Moses with some doubts. 600,000 men. How? From where? It's not possible. Is my arm too short? And so, God did exactly what he said. Verse 32. All that day and night and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers. Then they spread them out all around the camp. That's a lot of quail. Anyone know how many quail does it take to fill 10 homers? This isn't The Simpsons. Any ideas? How many quail? Just make a number up.
100.
So you think you could collect 100 all day, all night, and all the next day? I reckon we can do a bit more. They say 10 homer is basically 1,900 quail. That's a lot of quail, isn't it? So each person, on average, they gathered... No one gathered less than. So the minimum collected was 1,900 quail. times 600,000. How many is that, Steve? That's a lot. 1.6 billion quail. I think it is, something like that.
1.7.
He's probably right. You see, Moses, he wasn't so crazy, was he? When logically, rationally, you and I, looking at the world through our own eyes and understanding and interpreting what we see and what we understand of the way that the mechanics of life work, it wasn't so crazy, really, for Moses to say, God, this is too big. And God says, is my arm too short? I can do the ridiculous. I can turn things that you say are impossible and make them possible. What a lesson for Moses, and of course what a lesson for the people who had so wanted meat. Come with me back to Isaiah 50, just for a closing few comments. See, once we understand that the Lord's arm is not too short, once we understand that desire to reach, to save, to provide his own son for us, once we can understand that and feel that in our lives, then maybe we can read these words and put them to ourselves. You see, verse 4 says, in the middle of it, he wakens me morning by morning. That recognition that the fact that we woke up this morning was because of God. He wakens me. Wakens my ear to listen like one being taught. Down to verse 7. Because the sovereign Lord helps me, I will not be disgraced. Therefore I have set my face like flint. And I know I will not be put to shame. He who vindicates me is near. Who then will bring charges against me? Let us face each other. Who is my accuser? Let him confront me. It is the sovereign Lord who helps me. Who is he that will condemn me? They will wear out like a garment. The moths will eat them up. Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the word of his servant? Let him who walks in the dark, who has no light, trust in the name of the Lord and rely on his God. So whoever it is that's walking, stumbling, bumping into the edges, walking as if it's dark when it's actually fully light, let him start to trust in God. And rely on God. As he says in verse 9, it is the Lord who helps me. It's not us. It's not our strengths. It's not our capabilities. And did you notice the confidence in verse 7? I will not be disgraced. I set my face. I know I will not be put to shame. The confidence in that language. Is that what we can have? Is that what we can feel? That's what I said, trying to encourage and build us up. Make us go out of here feeling more confident. Because God is our deliverer. No, his arm is not too short to save. He has provided his own son for us. Because there was no one else. And so our challenge now is for this week, well, all weeks, but why not try even harder this week, that we can trust in the name of the Lord and rely on his God. Trust and rely on God. It's as simple as that.